This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. It's Wednesday, so that means Wes Reynolds will stop by. We'll talk some Indiana football, and now we're not forcing it, right? We're talking about a top 10 team in my eyes, and I think in many people's eyes, even though the pollsters have an 11. But if we learned anything from last weekend, the pollsters, we can overlook some of their decisions, Illinois being number 9. But we'll talk Indiana, we'll talk Penn State and Oregon, some situational spots with Wes, as we always do. And then Brett Ciancia from Pick Six Previews, who lives there in the state of Pennsylvania and had some really good insight on the whiteout and how Penn State has fared in those situations. I have been to a whiteout game. I went in 2007, and I'm very happy that I went to Beaver Stadium. It was a great experience to be there as a college football fan, but as a Notre Dame fan, not so much back in 2007, which, looking back at that 2007 team, feels like there's some similarities to that defense and to what Notre Dame has been showing in 2025. So a whole lot to get to here on the episode. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Saw a bunch of 5-star ratings on Spotify. Much appreciated there. We'll get to one particular rating here on iTunes here in just a moment that made me laugh. But please continue that. As always, too, we are now up and running on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. I think you have to put the ampersand in front of that. So at College Football Betting Podcast, as we all have 3 episodes a week up there. Amazing numbers last week for our Thursday preview with Matt Eumanns. Just a hair under 3,000 views. So much, much appreciated with that. So we did the podcast on Monday, and then on Tuesday, we get the breaking news that John Mateer is going to be sidelined for up to a month. And this is just brutal. It's a bad beat for those of you who have John Mateer tickets. I know we spoke a lot about Mateer during the offseason, and they've exceeded expectations, Oklahoma has, in my opinion. And they sit undefeated. I know there was some questionable refereeing there against Auburn, but still, they get the win. Their defense is on another level. So we'll see what Michael Hawkins can do, as he's a guy that has played a lot of football. He got the start in the bowl game, albeit a loss against Navy. Had a couple of moments last year when he stepped in for Jackson Arnold. But he's a guy that can run the football, but obviously he's not John Mateer. And we're going to have to see what Arbuckle's going to do there with this offense with Hawkins and how long John Mateer will be sidelined here for Oklahoma. And you look at the schedule, I mean, it's as brutal as it gets. Bye week this week, Kent State, which essentially is a bye week next week. But then it's Red River, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, who looks very good, and LSU. So only one team not ranked after their Kent State game, and that would be South Carolina, a preseason, top 10 team. And if Lenora Sellers is healthy, which he was last week, that's going to be a challenge at Williams-Brice in the middle of October, especially off of the Texas game. And it would seem like wishful thinking, Mateer might be back for their home game against Ole Miss, but it's his throwing hand. So how is he going to be able to grip the football? Certainly a lot of concerns there. And now because of that, we've seen a massive shift in the Heisman market of where we sit right now, as Fernando Mendoza is your betting favorite. And look, it's September 24th as we record this, week 5 of the college football season. And usually throughout the college football season, the Heisman market is one that has massive swings. Does Fernando Mendoza, should he be the favorite right now? Yeah, probably. But look, if you told me 20 different guys right now won the Heisman Trophy, I would listen to the argument. So it feels like there are so many different options to look at when it comes to the Heisman Trophy. But John Mateer dropping significantly down in the odds because of the injury, and he's going to miss arguably the biggest game of the season. And unfortunately, for me, as I took a long shot this offseason on Devin Dampier, which I think is what you should do. You should take those long shots during the offseason on Heisman Trophy tickets. Well, we took a massive hit this past week as Devin Dampier was not healthy. They did not play well. Kyle Whittingham getting a lot of criticism for not putting him on the injury report on Tuesday and Wednesday when he didn't practice. And Devin Dampier, I don't want to say it's dead, but it's pretty much toast, that ticket for Devin Dampier to win the Heisman Trophy. He's now 60-1. He probably should be longer than that. But I'll tell you a guy that is pretty fascinating to me in that 60-1 range based off of what we could see this weekend would be Damon Williams, 60-1. He's been spectacular so far for the Huskies. And if they go out and stun the world on Saturday afternoon against Ohio State, and the way that he plays, where he's a true dual threat, his numbers have been absolutely unreal so far this year. Damon Williams, for those of you who haven't seen, because they've played Colorado State late night, UC San Diego late night, and then they beat Washington State last week, he's completing 73.5% of his passes. Last week, 4 touchdowns, no picks, and he's rushed for 220 yards. He's an electric athlete. We played you an interview I had with Jed Fish over the offseason. I really love Damon Williams, and he's a guy that has quietly had an impressive year so far. And I think if you don't have any exposure on him to win the Heisman Trophy, if you're looking for a long shot here entering week 5 with a massive game ahead, I think Damon Williams, the way that he plays, is certainly worth a small ticket on to win the Heisman Trophy. And to be honest, I'm going to look around. I think I'm going to take a little bit of a nibble on Damon Williams, because what if they beat Ohio State on Saturday? And then what are you looking at for a ticket? Look, schedule's still tough. They still have to play Michigan on the road. They still have to play Oregon to wrap up the regular season. So they've got a lot of work to be done. But if he goes up against a defense that we saw excel against Arch Manning in week 1 and he has success and pulls off the upset, what are you looking at from a ticket there on Damon Williams? So if you're looking at a long shot, I would say Damon Williams, someone that I was high on coming into the year, didn't have a ticket on him to win the Heisman Trophy. I certainly would look that way. We'll talk a little fired coach bump here in a moment. We talked on Monday's podcast about possible replacements for Luke Fickell if/when he is ultimately fired. Mike Gundy, news came out on Tuesday. He's a man, and now he's unemployed. He has been fired by Oklahoma State. An absolute legend at Oklahoma State. I think it was the time for him to be relieved of his duties. It was ironic that on Monday, it was the 18-year anniversary of the I'm a Man, I'm 40 rant. And then the next day, they fired Mike Gundy. I don't know the full story behind it. If there was an opportunity for him to coach out the year, I believe that has been dispelled. I know Brett McMurphy, I'm sure, has all the insight on this with his connections to Oklahoma State. But, you know, I mentioned this on the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show, which is, as goofy as Mike Gundy is and as big of a character as he is, there's no denying that he's a phenomenal coach. And look, you lose 11 of your last 12 games. You lose to Tulsa at home for the first time since 1951. You lose to Oregon by 66 points after, you know, spouting from the mouth a bit prior to that game. It was time. But it is worth noting that this is by far the best coach in that school's history. He should have a statue outside the stadium, and hopefully with a beautiful, luscious mullet. I don't know how we can make sure that happens, but if you're going to have a statue of Mike Gundy outside Boone Pickens Stadium, we got to figure out how we can get a phenomenal mullet on Mike Gundy. But this guy led this program to 18 straight bowl games. They were on the doorstep of reaching a national championship not too long ago. He was amazing at Oklahoma State, the sustained success they had there at that program. But it was time, and we'll see ultimately what they decide to do to replace him. But, you know, there is going to be that fired coach bump. We'll see if it happens with UCLA. We'll talk about this with Wes Reynolds here in a little bit, as Deshaun Foster has been fired. Virginia Tech, they won but didn't cover against Wofford last week. I do think Virginia Tech feels like that's a team that is kind of dead on arrival, but we'll see how this year plays out, because it feels like there are a lot of possibilities of jobs opening up. Arkansas, certainly, the hot seat reopened after their loss last week to Memphis. You, of course, have seen Florida. I imagine that will be opening up. So a lot of things on that coaching hot seat we will keep our eyes peeled on. So we're going to take a quick break here in just a moment, but I did want to hit on this. So please hit us with a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. It helps us in the ratings as well, as we continue every week to be in the top 150 or so of iTunes sports podcasts. It's awesome to see. It's a testament to you guys. But if you want to talk smack about me, that's fine. Fair game. Just tweet me. Don't give us a 1-star review like my man who said, "Stop saying Hawaii. This dude can't go one single episode without saying Hawaii like a goofball." Now, I will say, maybe I say it a little goofy. I was trying to say it like my guy Kanoa Leahy says it, but I'll just stick to Hawaii. I won't go into the way that apparently annoys you. But it is worth noting, my man who gave us a 1-star review, they are Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor. So yes, I'm going to say Hawaii every single episode because they're a great sponsor and they've been with us all season long. And that's why I'm rocking the hat right now for those of you watching with us on YouTube. So plug the ears if you're upset about me saying Hawaii, because here it comes. Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and will be the whole year. So I just point that out there. The official source for game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards for the University of Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story. Whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles, you're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond the memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is also committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear like the hat that I'm wearing and oh so much more, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best every single game day. So mahalo to our friends and our proud sponsor of this podcast, Rainbow Authentics, over at rainbowauthentics.com. So yes, please hit us with that 5-star review and at one Tim Murray if you want to talk your smack and you want to give me a personal 1-star review, totally acceptable, but just do it there on Twitter. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll hit with Wes Reynolds, and then after that, Brett Ciancia. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Well, as you look at the calendar, it's Wednesday, and that means Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds joins us right now. A busy man, as he is rocking, for those of you watching with us on YouTube, a little USA garb as the Ryder Cup is on Friday. I do have some Ryder Cup questions for you, but we'll get to that towards the end. And of course, read his work over at VSiN.com, as well as the Long Shots podcast, part of our ever-growing podcast network. But I'll start with a team that wears red, and it's not USA. It's the Indiana Hoosiers. And boy, oh boy, Wes Reynolds, you are a tried and true Indiana man. Went to IU. That whooping, I'm not going to say biggest win, because they did make the playoff last year, so there were some big wins along the way, but primetime game, 63 points against Illinois, and honestly, it could have been worse. Your takeaways of Indiana, and now, after the news of John Mateer's injury, the owner of the Heisman Trophy favorite, Wes Reynolds. Are you pinching yourself? Is this real life right now?
There was a famous song by the Swedish group ABBA called Fernando. Can you hear the drums, Fernando? And we're hearing the drums, the Heisman drums, for Heisman Doza, as they're calling it right now. That's the hashtag, is Fernando Mendoza. Just tremendous performance from him. And I felt, and we talked about it last week, I felt Indiana was going to win the game. I did not feel they were going to win 63-10. What really I think was the you know, just stunning thing that we saw in that game was how the Indiana defensive line just kicked the Illinois defensive line's backsides all up and down the field. I almost felt sorry as an IU fan for Luke Altmyer. I'm like, maybe you ought to get him out of the game. This guy's taking a beating right now. But then I remembered back in 2010 when Brett Bielema was at Wisconsin, and he hung 83 on the Hoosiers, 83-20 up there in Madison. So I was like, run it up, man. run it up. We keep receipts, even though Kurt Cignetti was not part of the program, certainly at that time. But 63-10, and they made Illinois look like it was Illinois State or Southern Illinois or an FCS program. And it, just to see that, I think, you know, Indiana, I think, got some respect. And everybody is, of course, chanting overrated at Illinois. And maybe they weren't number nine in the country, but maybe Indiana was underrated. You know, maybe, you know, you know, who's this year's Indiana? Could be Indiana again, and it certainly looked like it last Saturday night. But a bit of a toughie, I think, even though the market doesn't seem to think so, a bit of a toughie at Iowa coming this Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I went back, and shout out to Evan Abrams for looking this up for me over at the Action Network, because it doesn't happen all that often to see Iowa in this role, Wes. So since 2010, Iowa being a touchdown or more home dog, it's only happened seven times, and they're 5-2 ATS, 2-5 straight up. I think most memorable moment was 2017 when Ohio State walked in there as a three touchdown favorite and lost 55-24. So when you look at the trends, and once again, you know, I like to bring up trends. Does the 2022 Iowa team have anything to do with the 2025 Iowa team? Absolutely not. But Kirk Ferentz obviously was there. But this is a rarity to see an Iowa team this big of a dog at home. And, you know, earlier in the week, we always play overreaction or market correction. And I think it's a little bit of both. And, you know, it's kind of crazy because last year, Wes, we were all trying to catch up to Indiana, right? The market was trying to catch up. You know, we were trying to think about when we could fade this team. Maybe the market went too far, and it really, we never could catch up until the very end of the season with that Ohio State game. So I'm curious your thoughts as someone who knows this program as well as anybody on planet Earth. Indiana now a 7.5 or 8-point favorite at Iowa. Has this gone too far, or is this a situation where Indiana and those explosive wide receivers and an elite quarterback can take advantage of what looks to be a rather leaky secondary for Iowa?
It's probably a little bit of both, Tim, and I would have made it 6.5. And now you're seeing 7.5 and even some eights out there. So probably from a line, like a number standpoint, it's maybe gone a little bit too far. That being said, I don't think that this is necessarily going to be a letdown per se for Indiana coming off that. I think that they know that this is a challenge. I think Kurt Cignetti, I trust Kurt Cignetti that he's going to keep these guys focused, because that's what he does. He always kind of finds, you know, different things. Well, there's something that we didn't do well. Even though, you know, they did pretty much everything well on Saturday night, offense, defense, and special teams. But that last phrase that I mentioned, that last term, special teams, that's what always concerns me with Iowa. Because do I think that Iowa can go up and down the field with Indiana and trade score for score? No, I don't. And you saw that defense a little bit last week. Now, credit Phil Parker for making the adjustments in the second half, the Hawkeyes defensive coordinator. Rutgers threw all over these guys. And I'm like, if the Greek rifle, Kali Akmanis, can do it, I think Fernando Mendoza, now the Heisman favorite, could certainly do it. But what does concern me, and now at 7.5, 8, I certainly wouldn't lay Indiana here. I just think that that's asking for a little bit of trouble. Anything under a touchdown, I think, would be worth it. But Iowa special teams really concern me, because they always seem to get a punt return, they always seem to get a kick return or a blocked field goal or a blocked punt. We saw it materialize last week, by the way. The opening kickoff, Wetchin returned it, and Kurt Cignetti talked about that a lot in his press conference on Monday, about their kick return and their punt return game is one of the best in the country, and it certainly is. So Iowa can hang in this game with special teams and turnovers, and that's why I'm not laying it here.
It is kind of funny, Kirk Cignetti, who, once again, you love him. Obviously, all Indiana fans do. He's a great personality. He can be a little much at times, but so can Bert Bielema. So when he took an extra jab this week at Illinois, I kind of enjoyed it, saying, you know, this game, we're definitely going to have to be more buttoned up.
Yeah, this is more of a challenge than last week, certainly. I was like, damn, man, that you know, get that little extra stab in there at the end after you roll 63-10. So, you know, but you know what? Indiana, and I've talked about this before, Tim, Indiana's needed a guy like that. That's a little bit prickly, shall we say, in terms of the personality. Somebody that's confident, somebody that gives the program and gives the university and the fan base some confidence in this program, and they haven't had that, and now they finally got it, and they got it in spades with this guy.
Two monster road games down the road against Oregon and Penn State, but of course, Kinnick Stadium Saturday afternoon. Well, Wes, we got a massive one in Happy Valley. Penn State, Oregon, a team that you were very high on in the preseason, and many others were as well. Our guest, Brett Ciancia, who will join us here in just a little bit. We'll get some insight on whiteouts and how they fared in those situations, Wes. So, look, he gets the moniker Big Game James from a lot of us, very tongue inserted into cheek. They're a 3.5-point favorite, and I haven't texted with our buddy Chris the Bear Felica yet, but it does feel a little bit like maybe a dog with fleas situation brewing there in Happy Valley. Oregon only 3.5, but kind of that hook remaining. Curious your thoughts on Penn State, Oregon. It's the primo spot. This is what they asked for. Three preseason games, essentially, a bye week, and now the whiteout to welcome in Oregon.
Yeah, no excuses, certainly, for Penn State, I think, in this spot. And I was high on them, and I bet them to win the national championship, also to make the playoff. I think that this all sets up for the Nittany Lions here. And Oregon has certainly been impressive. I know, you know, they got bet under at 10.5. I bet under a little bit under 10.5 wins on them, and they've been very impressive, and they're absolutely a contender. But I think coming into Happy Valley, this is where we finally see it all come together for Penn State. They went and tried to improve the defense from a coordinator standpoint after Tom Allen did leave for Clemson. Mm-hmm. My old college classmate, Pat Kraft, who's now the athletic director at Penn State, they spent a bunch of money to get Jim Knowles from Ohio State. Like, you don't just pluck a defensive coordinator from a national championship team, you know, without a lot of money and without a vision of something big and high expectations. And that's what Penn State has done. I think if you look at their performances where they played Nevada and FIU and then, of course, Villanova last time out, they've really not shown very much on offense. It's been very basic in terms of the play calling. We know Andy Kotelnicki has some wrinkles as offensive coordinator, and they like to run a lot of different motions and, you know, just move people all over the place. This is where I think maybe we see the full McCoy. This is what they've been saving for, is this exact game. And if Penn State gets out to a lead, I trust the defense, and I trust that running game with Catron Allen, Nicholas Singleton, arguably the best backfield duo in the country, and Penn State returning most of their offensive line. Penn State can win a game running the football. Drew Aller, I think, is going to have to make a couple throws at some point in this game, and I think that he can. I know at the end of last season, he did not leave everybody with a positive impression with how he played in that Orange Bowl against Notre Dame, where you were at in person in Miami. But this is where I think Penn State, you know, finally gets that big signature win in conference play. I laid a little money line. There's still some threes out there with the Nittany Lions. I do think Oregon is certainly going to get the backing maybe from the general public simply because of what we've seen with Penn State laying an egg in these spots over the years. And it's kind of like, okay, you got to prove it to me. And I certainly understand that. But I think the Nittany Lions are going to prove it Saturday night.
I want to stay in the Big Ten. A couple more games I want to hit on with you, Wes. And Washington, Ohio State is a fascinating spot. 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 local kick. We know that Seattle is always a challenging place for teams to travel to. Ohio State over the summer was a 14-point favorite. Last week, 11.5-point favorite. And now the market continues to come in on Washington. I saw it moving on Sunday. I was able to grab a small piece of 10, but right now, obviously, sitting at 8.5, 8. I really like this Washington team. I bet them as a long shot to make the playoff at plus 950 this offseason. And look, did I fully expect them to beat Ohio State? No, but I love Damon Williams. We had Jed Fish on the podcast earlier this summer at Big Ten Media Day. His eyes lit up talking about Damon Williams. But as you mentioned, and a lot of these teams, they haven't faced a defense like they're going to face on Saturday afternoon. Curious your thoughts on Washington and Ohio State out in Seattle.
Yeah, I didn't get the best number. I took 8.5 with UW here. Missed it on Sunday with all the NFL shenanigans, just a typical NFL Sunday with blocked field goals deciding games, good and bad for me. But so I didn't get the opener, but I did take 8.5 here for a couple reasons. Number one, Julian Sain, first road start. And I think kind of a tricky place to play up there at UW, and I think they'll have a big loud crowd. This is a game that they'll be geared up for, you know, because you're getting a team now that you're a member of the Big Ten, you're in the same conference, but you usually don't get Ohio State out there. They had Michigan out there a couple years ago and did beat them, but I think, you know, a new quarterback making his first road start, kind of a tricky environment. And also the fact that I think that Washington, from just a matchup standpoint, they can run the ball. As good as Ohio State's defense was, where they pretty much stymied Arch Manning from almost doing anything. And Ohio State's secondary is tremendous. But I think Washington can run the ball on Ohio State. Texas certainly did. Ran it 37 times for 166, so that's 4.5 a clip. So that shows at least you can run it somewhat consistently, even if you're not really gashing them for long runs. And I think Washington can do that too, not only with Jonah Coleman, but with Williams, the quarterback. He's very much a running threat. And you may have seen Washington earlier this year not show as much. They had Colorado State, and then they had UC Davis, and then, of course, a bye week, and then the Apple Cup last week where they stomped Washington State. So, you know, they might have been holding something back here a little bit. I think Washington can actually match up in the trenches with Ohio State. So I thought 10 was generous. I still think 8.5 is a little bit generous. Anything, 7.5 or better, I still think is worth a stab on UW here.
All right, another Big Ten game I wanted to get your thoughts on. You know, Mike Gundy relieved of his duties earlier this week. We've seen a couple of coaches fired. UCLA did not play a game after they fired Deshaun Foster. Tim Skipper steps in on an interim basis. I opened up the podcast a week ago, Wes, talking about the adjusted win total for UCLA being 1.5. And I played under at +135. So this is a big one for me as UCLA heads to Lake Michigan to take on Northwestern. 6.5 is the number, total 44.5. I'm curious your handicap on this one.
Yeah, I did take UCLA +7. You'd have to buy it -120 now if you want that. But what we think is going to be a low-scoring game with the totals in the mid-40s, I don't have confidence in the Purple Cats laying almost a touchdown here against anybody. They've turned it over too much. Preston Stone, I think, you know, to be fair, has been a disappointment. He's thrown 6 interceptions already this year. This is a team that I think still struggles to run the ball a little bit. I know they got the backdoor cover for me against Oregon on the lake a couple weeks ago. But UCLA, like, is there any pride here? Is there any pride in this program? You know, and Tim Skipper's been in this situation before where he's been an interim coach, certainly at Fresno most recently. But, you know, UCLA going on the road, I worry about Northwestern turning over the football to UCLA. And that is certainly a concern because I don't think UCLA's defense has been horrible. And that sounds really weird to say considering New Mexico ended up putting it on them, but I think it was because the offense really put them in jail. But, you know, they've been okay against the run, UCLA, I think to start the season. And I just thought this was too rich and, you know, you're going on the road. Maybe it's good to get away from Los Angeles, get away from all the BS and whatnot, and go on the road to Northwestern where you're playing against that, you know, in that 12,000 seat stadium there, that temporary stadium on the lake. So I thought UCLA getting a touchdown was just a little rich here in what is, I think, more of a coin flippy game.
Let's get to some situational spots. I love to do this, and every Tuesday on primetime, we run through some letdown spots, some look-ahead spots, the old sandwich spot, which Arkansas fell victim to last week. And I want to get on some letdown spots. I want to start in the SEC, because you had Auburn just kind of have their guts ripped out, and I don't know if you had it, Wes, but I had in the Westgate Super Contest 6.5 with Auburn, so that late safety, not ideal for me. Did have 7 in pocket, so a push there, but You know, if you're Auburn, how do you get back off the mat to go on the road to College Station where Texas A&M coming off a bye after their win over Notre Dame? So I'm curious if this is looked at in your eyes as a potential tricky spot situationally for Auburn for a 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 local kick there against Texas A&M.
Yeah, and a lot of the sevens have disappeared. It's basically 6.5. So if you want to get that seven, you probably got to go -120 at a lot of different stores. And I would lean Auburn. I have not bet this. Yeah. If a seven shows again without having to buy it, I would certainly, I think, be on the Tigers here. Because with A&M, and this is not a slap at your Fighting Irish necessarily, Tim, even winning in South Bend, and look, that's always a good win. But I still don't know how good Texas A&M is because I don't know how good Notre Dame is. I know their defense is not very good.
No, it is not.
And Texas A&M, you know, credit Marcel Reed for making the plays. That last touchdown should have been a holding penalty called, but it was not called. So it doesn't matter now. They won the football game. But Texas A&M, and maybe it was that they weren't showing anything, so I don't want to put too much into the first couple games of the year, but they never really ran away and hid from Utah State. UTSA got in the back door. So I think this Aggies defense can be had a little bit, especially against the run. And that's one thing I think Auburn does very well is they run the football. We saw them do that in the opener against Baylor. It was a little bit tougher sledding against Oklahoma, certainly. They only had 67 net rushing yards. I think this is like a drop in class in terms of being able to run the football. So I think if you can run the football on A&M, which I think they can, I think that they're going to keep this competitive.
I want to hit on the Notre Dame-Arkansas game. You know, we talked about Ohio State and Washington, the move we've seen in the market there. Over the summer, Arkansas, about a 12.5-point dog at home. They've looked, at least offensively, better than expected. Notre Dame defensively, obviously, is a far cry from what they were a year ago. Two things I want to hit on here, Wes. Total and side. Let's start with the total, because Notre Dame and Miami, and I now, thinking back on it, feel very fortunate to be able to cash that under in the Notre Dame-Miami game. The closing number actually was 50.5 for Notre Dame-Miami, so actually the over did hit in Notre Dame-Miami. And then Texas A&M, total close 49.5. It was a best bet on this podcast, 41-40. And then Matt Eumanns and I talked about on the tailgate show, the Purdue-Notre Dame game, close 51. There was sharp money, apparently, on the under, and that thing flew over 56-30. So Notre Dame's 3-0 to the over. Arkansas, if you remove their win over an FCS opponent, they're 3-0 to the over as well. But this total is high, right? Notre Dame's highest total was 51, and now it's 64.5. But I don't know, Wes, how you play the under in this game, knowing that Notre Dame's defense has looked as leaky as they had, and Notre Dame's offense might be the best offense they've had, honestly, since Charlie Weiss in 2005. So I'm curious, from a total standpoint, has this gone too far now being at 64.5?
Yeah, I'm certainly not wanting to bet the under here, but this is a big leap, and there's even some 65.5 as we record here. I certainly wouldn't want to bet the under. From the side perspective, I guess I somewhat understand the steam on Arkansas because you're playing against that Notre Dame defense that has certainly not been good. That has been a massive drop off from Al Golden to Chris Ash in terms of a coordinator. But now you're getting Arkansas third straight week where they have had tight battles. You know, they were, even though they had to get in the back door, that was pretty much an even game in the stats at Ole Miss, where they lose by 6, and then you lose on the road at Memphis. That late fumble where they had it all there, and you know, I got old takes exposed a little bit on the social media on Saturday because I said, you know what, Memphis ought to let them score, because it was like 2nd and 1 from the 5. And Memphis, you know, had already burned a timeout. It's like, you got to get the football back here because, you know, if they don't score and you get stops, they get a chip shot field goal. And then what happens? The ball carrier lands on somebody and loses the football and Memphis recovers the fumble. I was like, no, my logic was right. It just happened to, you know, not go that way. But so I wonder how much gas is left in the tank for Arkansas, because now they're talking about Sam Pittman being back on the hot seat down in Fayetteville. I'm gun-shy about betting the side on this game. If anything, maybe the value's on Notre Dame now that it's gone down to 4, but this is not one I'm looking to get involved with.
Yeah, it is a game when it you know, the schedule came out. I was always nervous about going down to Fayetteville. I did like that it's an 11 a.m. local game as opposed to a primetime game. So we'll see how the Irish fare with C.J. Carr, second road environment, as he did play at Miami. All right, let's talk a couple other situational spots from a letdown standpoint. Tulsa gets their first win over Oklahoma State in Stillwater since 1951. Now they play Tulane. And then Memphis, the team you just mentioned, Wes, they get the big win over Arkansas, and now they have to go to Boca. Classic letdown spot, around a 2-touchdown underdog. Anything of interest in either one of those two particular spots?
I have not bet Tulane-Tulsa yet, and then obviously the move has been to Tulane. I think the market does have that right. Tulsa, of course, goes and beats Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy gets his walking papers yesterday. So, you know, that's a huge win for Tulsa, for a new coach and for a program that's been struggling. And now you got Tulane smarting off, getting smacked around down there in the Grove by Ole Miss. I still think Tulane probably the rightful favorite in the American Athletic Conference. So now this is where the focus is. Now this is, okay, conference play. We're trying to get that group of five. I know there's a few contenders, by the way, in the American for that, but Tulane certainly at the top of the list. So I think that that's right here. And I did bet Florida Atlantic plus 14. It's now 13.5 in the market, so maybe worth a smaller play. Over's been hit. I can certainly see why. FAU with Veitkamp at quarterback, he ran that air raid. He was with Ben Arbuckle, who's now the OC at Oklahoma, and they run tempo, tempo, tempo. They were bad against Maryland in week one because they turned it over, I think, like five times, but I think this is tough for Memphis to go on the road after you beat Arkansas. Memphis has had a couple big wins to start the season. So this is one of those ones where can you get enough stops to get margin? And that's the whole key for Memphis. And I don't know necessarily that they can get all those stops. They certainly did against Troy, but that was against Troy's like backup quarterback who really couldn't throw the ball in that game. So FAU, I think, at 2 touchdowns is certainly worth it. Would certainly lean to the over as well at 63.5.
Sko, a couple other spots I want to get your thoughts on, and all your plays are up at VSiN.com/picks. Let's go to some look-aheads. We've got Vanderbilt taking on Utah State. Both these teams unblemished against the spread. Vanderbilt's been great against the number so far, covering better than anyone just based off of numbers out there. But Utah State, very pesky as well. Alabama is on deck there for Vanderbilt. Boise State plays Appalachian State. That number has gotten as high as 17. They go to Notre Dame next week. And then a spot that you and I think both share a play on, Florida State plays at Virginia on a Friday night with Miami on deck. So three spots, possible look-aheads. Of those three, which ones have you played?
Yeah, the only one I played so far is the Wahoos, is UVA at 7.5, and I'd play at 7, too. I'm not convinced that Florida State, like, how good do we think that they really are? Great win against Alabama, and Alabama is still going to end up being a pretty good team. So that win, I don't think, is going to be, you know, smeared or marginalized in any kind of way. That's still beating Alabama. But how good are they really? And I don't know yet. Like, people are ranking Florida State in the top five. I don't think they're a top five team by any stretch. This was a team that won two games last year. So, you know, that's a big jump here. And I think Virginia, they've got a real quarterback with Chandler Morris. I ended up laying it against Stanford just because I thought it was a tough spot for Stanford, and then the travel all the way east. And Virginia eventually pulled away from them. So I think UVA has a real quarterback that can drive him down the field. Not that Calandra was bad, but I think Chandler Morris is an upgrade there at quarterback. So I did bet Virginia. I'm considering Utah State as well, and I'm seeing a couple 23s out there. Look, Bronco Mendenhall covered at Texas A&M a couple weeks ago, and they're 3-1, and they've already got a very good win over Air Force. So it would not shock me to see Utah State, and I just trust Bronco in these things. And they've got a senior quarterback, too, in Bryson Barnes, the pig farmer there, the pig farming family there in Utah. And he's been through it. You know, he's played in big games before, so he's not going to be intimidated going on the road in the SEC. Certainly wasn't in College Station, and I don't think would be in Nashville on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm glad I stayed off last week. It was your typical letdown spot, you would think, for Vanderbilt. However, you had the revenge factor against Georgia State.
And Georgia State's really bad. They're a lot worse than I thought that they would be.
And they put up a 70 burger in that one. So I was glad I was stayed off of that one. I think this is the spot. I probably will have Utah State when we do the pick selections on Thursday. All right, before I let you run, Wes, I did want to hit a little SEC and then one more thought on the Ryder Cup. So Mississippi State got there for us a couple weeks ago. I love this spot with Arizona State coming to town. And now we've seen a pretty big move here towards the Cowbells as they are catching now 7.5 at home. There were double digits out there, I think, last week. So we've seen those double digits get scooped up. Do you think Mississippi State, similar to what we saw a couple weeks ago, is feisty here against the Vols?
I do, and I took a little 9 on Sunday. This actually, I think, went down to maybe like 6.5, so there's been a little bit of buyback on the Vols. Maybe there's some guys working middles, you know, who knows with some of this line movement. But with Tennessee, I just think you're getting a defense that's pretty darn physical in Mississippi State, and Arizona State certainly found that out, and I think Tennessee may find that out as well. Maybe Mississippi State is a little bit underrated because, like, in that SEC, somebody's got to be picked at the bottom, I guess, and Mississippi State was. But Jeff Lebby now in the second year, that's where you see programs more often than not improve, is that second year after the first year is where you see the biggest leap in improvement, if you will. So I thought, you know, 7.5 or north was worth a take on Mississippi State. So, you know, a little bit of a tough spot there, I think, for the Vols there in Stark Vegas. They got right against UAB last week after that win against Georgia. But, you know, doesn't get any easier in this conference. And Tennessee's got a bye week, so certainly not a look ahead. But I just thought that number was a little rich.
All right, we'll do a recap here in just a moment because that was a request from a couple weeks ago, and I think people were happy to get a little recap of your plays, Wes. But you're rocking the USA garb for the Ryder Cup. Bethpage Black will be the location on Long Island. Europe, a slight underdog. I found this interesting. We had Jeff Sherman on VSiN Primetime Tuesday night, and he said if this were in Europe, he would make Europe a minus $2 favorite, but the advantage of home course is so massive in his eyes. I'm curious, just from a simplicity standpoint, USA versus Europe. You'll get into the nuts and bolts on long shots and on vsin.com, but USA, Europe, is this number right? Should USA be a favorite against Europe?
They should be a favorite because they have the home course advantage and they have the setup where, you know, widen the fairways a little bit, you know, lower rough, because Europeans, when they have the home site, they can set up the course. They like that thicker rough a little bit, narrower fairway. So the course setup, I think, favors the Americans. They should be the favorite, but the continuity is for the Europeans. 11 of 12 members back from that victorious team in Rome in 2023. The only switch was the other twin Højgaard is on the team instead, you know, Rasmus instead of Nikolai. So it's like, the Bella twins in WWE when they did that little switch and you didn't know which one was legal, the legal woman in the ring. So that's what they're doing here with Europe. And Europe has a lot of the same pairings that they could throw out in foursomes early on with Rory, McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Hovland, Ludwig Gobert, and then also John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton. So, you know, Keegan Bradley has a little bit more work to do, and I think he's done a good job as captain, but the players got to play, and your big guns also have to deliver. Scottie Scheffler is now the clear number one player in the world. He's got to get as max points as possible, like Rory did in Rome last time out for the Europeans. So, you know, probably a little bit big of a number on USA here, but they have held serve the last two times on home soil. So they're certainly favored to do it again, and I think probably the rightful favorite, but probably the price, if you're looking at it now, would be on the European side to either win an outright or to lift the trophy, which is like plus $1.30, plus $1.35, because that brings the tie into place too, Tim. If it's 14-14 with 28 total points, the team that currently has the trophy, in this case Europe, maintains that trophy.
All right, make sure to check out Long Shots, the podcast, breaking down all of golf. Make sure it's part of your rotation, vsin.com. All right, let's do a recap here. We'll run through these quickly. Florida State at Virginia, Friday night. You and I both took 7.5. Right now, 7. Still worth a play for UVA.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's go to Saturday. Memphis, Florida Atlantic, not there yet. Maybe a look at Florida Atlantic. I know you said you took 14. I want to go to a game quickly underneath that rotation-wise. This is one of my favorite plays of the week. The three has been scooped up, but I think this is a really tricky spot for San Diego State at Northern Illinois. What do you think about the boys from DeKalb?
Yeah, I took plus three on the bye here. I know a lot of people liked them last week against Mississippi State. Mississippi State got back, got away from them in the second half. But San Diego State, just tough here. Just tough here, I think, for these guys to go to DeKalb after you beat, an ACC team in Cal. So I like NIU in that preferred underdog role.
Northwestern laying 6.5 against UCLA. You like the old fired coach bump here.
I do. So I think the Bruins and the coin flip game probably comes down to a field goal here.
If you can get 7, you're in on War Eagle against Texas A&M.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully we get that 7. I'm not sure if we will. We may have to pay for it.
All right, and then we'll wrap with this. We've got Penn State, Mississippi State, and Washington, all three spots that you're looking at here to have on your card.
Yeah, absolutely. They're in the Big Ten, so bets on all three of those for me.
Wes, always appreciate it. Make sure you check out all of his content over at vsin.com. All of the picks as well for every sport, WNBA, NFL, college football, Ryder Cup, everything you need to know. Wes, always appreciate it. We'll talk next Wednesday.
Great to be with you, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, will give us his thoughts on the whiteout in Happy Valley.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, excited to bring in Brett Ciancia. I feel like this has been the week he's been waiting for. He's got that picturesque Pennsylvania background there, not too far from State College. They were your preseason number one team. And this is the game the folks in the Keystone State have been waiting for. So let's jump right into it, Brett. Whiteout against Oregon, 3.5-point favorites are the Nittany Lions. And you did a little digging on Pick 6 Plus. How Penn State has fared in whiteout games against the spread, straight up. So what did you unearth on the history of this whiteout game, which we will get on Saturday night in Happy Valley?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big one. The idea for the whiteout started back in 2002. They were hosting Nebraska back then. Nebraska came in as a top 10 team. And, Nebraska's fans travel really well as the Sea of Red, they call it. So the Penn Staters got together. They called it Operation Visine, get the red out. And they ended up going white out, first time ever. They blew them out 40-7. They had a big pick six to win the game against Nebraska. And it's kind of stuck since. Once a year against their biggest opponent, they'll do a white out. And they've had a lot of success doing this. 15-6 against the spread since 2002 when they launched this thing. And that's good for the upwards of 72% cover rate right there. And then an 8-0 run. So since the 2016 block field goal against Ohio State, undefeated against the spread during this whiteout. So I think it's one of the best home field advantages in college football. And they're doing it against some of the best competition every year, too. So big time atmosphere for a younger quarterback like Dante Moore. I know he started a couple, about a half a year at UCLA and then now about a half a year with Oregon. But I don't think any environment quite like this. So he's going into a hornet's nest at Penn State. It's going to be electric. And one of the top defenses in the country. This is part of the reason, part of the logic why I had Penn State number one in the country was around this defense. A lot of guys that could have gone pro returned. It's a great defensive line. Zane Duran already has an interception from his defensive tackle spot. And then Jim Knowles, the coordinator they brought over from Ohio State. He's a mastermind. So a lot to like from Penn State's defense in this one. And yeah, the home field is as hard as it gets.
Yeah, I was at the 2007 whiteout game, and we didn't know just how terrible Notre Dame was at that point, but I believe Notre Dame had a pick six early in that game. We got excited, and then it went all downhill from there. And I can attest, man, that is a daunting and very intimidating environment to be a part of there in Happy Valley. I was there 18 years ago. I can only imagine how electric it'll be on Saturday night. What did your numbers ultimately come out to for this game? How much have you upgraded this Oregon team through their first three blowout wins of the season?
They've got a nice upgrade. They came in, I think, sixth in the country for me, so I already had them pretty high, and they have blown away all expectations so far. It's like sometimes they're playing on air, it looks like. It's like a 7-on-7 scrimmage, just chunk play after chunk play. That's what stands out. The difference between these two so far is, yes, they're both undefeated. Oregon's had slightly a tougher schedule. I don't know what we think about Oklahoma State and Oregon State, some of the lower rated Power Fives out there. But still, I mean, they have just, the difference I found was just the chunk plays, how easy it is for Oregon's offense just to scale the field in seconds. I think if you're looking at explosive plays, Oregon's top 10 in my explosiveness for rushing and top 10 in passing. Penn State, nowhere close. They're actually under the national average in both. So I think Oregon might get their chunk plays. Ultimately, my numbers are showing Penn State, though, still to win it. I've got Penn State winning by about 5, and that's only factoring in a normal home field advantage of 3 points. You might even want to upgrade that home field advantage like we talked about with a night game whiteout and cross-country element, too, with Oregon going as far away as you could go all the way out here to Pennsylvania. So, yeah, I think about a 5-point spread seems right. I'm going to go Penn State there to cover and win.
Yeah, it's going to be an electric atmosphere like we've talked about all throughout the show. Just had Wes Reynolds on. He likes Penn State. Took a little money line piece there on the Nittany Lions, and we'll see how ultimately the betting market shapes this thing as we get closer over the summer. Around 4.5, right now 3.5, mostly market-wide. A big move, though, from the summer to now has been Ohio State and Washington. I think you and I, Brett, were simpatico a bit on this Washington team maybe being better than expected. I took a little piece on them to make the playoff as a long shot, you know, plus 950 over the summer. Damon Williams has been great, albeit against lesser competition, hasn't faced a defense like he's going to face on Saturday against Ohio State. But another thing that you put into Pick Six Plus this week that I want you to expand on is the travel. And, you know, this is something that I know pro bettors have talked about. Paul Stone discussed it this summer. Teams traveling from west to east or east to west, it's been challenging here. So what did you note in Pick Six Plus this week regarding the travel? Because Ohio State obviously will be traveling from Columbus out to Seattle on Saturday.
Yeah, I put together a little study here in Pick Six Plus this week looking at the travel teams. And what made me think of it was in 2024, you had the four Pac-12 teams join the Big Ten. Of course, Oregon, USC, UCLA, Washington. And then you had Cal and Stanford join the ACC from the Bay Area. So looking at those six schools this year and last year, so about a 1.5-year sample size, the traveling team. Now, whether that's those six teams I mentioned flying east or their opponents flying out west, the traveling team is 19-35 against the spread, something like a 34% cover rate, well under 500. So factor that in a little bit. I mean, it plays in pro sports too, but especially here with college football, with these newer travel destinations. So that's in there for this week, but really it's strength on strength on the field when Washington has the ball. I think it's one of the best offenses in America, going up against arguably the best defense with Ohio State, the way they shut down Texas and really shut down everybody, number one in scoring. But with Washington, this is a team me and you talked on your show in the summer. This was one of my best bet win totals. They were coming in at around, I think it was 7.5, and I took the over. The markets have shifted that up a full game so far. They're now looking at around over 8.5. So I like how they've started so far. I know it's three non-conference games, but offense unstoppable. They've scored on 22 straight drives heading into Saturday. That's just unbelievable. I don't care who you're playing. That's unbelievable stats. And Damon Williams looks like a Kyler Murray-type quarterback back there, very shifty. So I think we'll see some points in this one. Maybe a little backdoor cover by Washington at the end. It's sitting around 8 or 9 points. That's about accurate for me.
Yeah, it's been a big mover, no doubt. And we talked briefly about it. I did take a little Washington over the weekend. Probably will dive into them more and more than likely give them out as a best bet on tomorrow's podcast, Brett. So another game, you know, you and I talked about kind of buy low or overreactions after the poor performance from Alabama in week one. And I wouldn't say we've been validated yet because Alabama hasn't really played anyone since that opening loss to Florida State. But this is a massive showdown, obviously, on Saturday between the hedges, primetime game. We've seen the market come in a bit on Alabama here. It's now at 3. So I'm curious your breakdown of Alabama and Georgia and where you are on this Alabama team, because you and I, once again, very similar, pretty high on Alabama coming into this year. And after a poor performance in week one, have seemed to, once again, against lesser competition, right the ship a little bit here.
Yeah, I'm interested to see both these teams, really a second view with them. I mean, their second big test, of course, Alabama came out really flat against Florida State, lost a, you know, it was a terrible performance. Since then, they've done what they're supposed to do. They've taken care of business. Perfect football against UL Monroe, perfect football again against Wisconsin. Looking at the quarterback play, again, it's been perfect. Literally, it was 17 for 17 passing the ball in that second game. And, you know, you got your receivers healthy there. Ryan Williams is back and looks electric as ever. So, So I want to see their second impression here against Georgia. Similar with Georgia, they came out flat offensively against Austin Peay in their opener. You know, you expect 55 plus points against an FCS team like that, and I think they were held to 28. So there was that. Their first impression against Tennessee was awesome. Offense looked alive. I mean, they were throwing the ball over the yard. Gunnar Stockton looked really composed and made some perfect throws into the end zone. I want to see both their second views here. I saw this matchup last year. I was down in Tuscaloosa. It was one of the best games I've ever been to, if not the best. Just how the back and forths of it. Alabama took a huge lead. Georgia stormed all the way back with Carson Beck looking like a Heisman candidate. And then at the last second, it flipped again with Ryan Williams with his spectacular catch and run. This year, I'm going to lean Alabama here. I know we saw a terrible performance in week one. But looking at the numbers of it, I have it more like a pick 'em, a toss-up. So if you're giving me a field goal with Alabama, I'm going to take it. One other angle with this game, this matchup, Georgia comes in since 2020, they're 63-3 against everybody not named Alabama, 1-4 against Bama. So Kirby Smart, it's tough to beat his old school here with Alabama. And a lot of that is during the Saban era, a lot of playoff and SEC title matchups. But this one has as much at stake. I mean, these are two playoff caliber teams going at it. It's going to go a long way in deciding a spot in Athens.
You know, Brett, we're starting to get the data now. Some teams have played 4 games. A couple have played 5 games if you played in week 0. And now, based off of how you kind of tabulate all your numbers, a lot of the last season data you can kind of almost throw away. And now you're kind of got what is here in 2025. I am curious what you have for Indiana. We just talked about them extensively with Wes. And, you know, this is a team that just absolutely obliterated Illinois. What was your game grade of them against Illinois, and where do you have this team Indiana now after 4 weeks of the season?
Yeah, I'm glad you worded it that way, because it's true. It's that time of the season where you start to peel off some of the prior data coming in and really focus in on the real game data we have at stake. So that percentage is shifting. And at the same exact time, Indiana goes and drops a 63-point bomb on Illinois. That checks in as the highest game grade all season, all teams for me. I mean, that was unbelievable performance, both sides of the ball. Actually, all three phases. It started with a blocked punt by All-American D'Angelo Pons. From there, it was all Indiana. Mendoza's playing perfect football at quarterback, 14 touchdowns, 0 picks. I think he's number 2 in the quarterback rating stat. They look like they were last year, where they were blowing everybody out. But now you have a full year of evidence stacked on top of it. So Indiana, one of my fastest risers, like I said, the timing of it, they shifted all the way into my top 10 in the power ratings right now. And if you project forward, they're going to be in a couple toss-ups that might flip a playoff spot. So yeah, that was, and you know what, it was a little bit vindicating too, because I was really low on Illinois in the preview magazine. That forecast caught a lot of questions from everybody. I had them 35th coming into the season. I mean, they did not look like the AP top, number 9 team in the country. So that validated some of the research, but still a long way to go.
No doubt. No, it's still a long way to go. It's absolutely right. But no, I hear you on Illinois. I think there are a lot of people kind of puffing out their chests, even their head coach, regarding that squad. We'll see how they do this weekend, though. Big test for Illinois at home against USC. Another team we talked about, obviously, last week was Texas Tech. And I didn't say I was going to bet against them. I just didn't know what I was going to see from them. And boy, very impressive performance on the road at Rice-Eccles. So similarly to what I asked about Indiana, how much have you upgraded Texas Tech, and what was their game grade for their win over Utah on Saturday?
Yeah.
Well, coming in, it's easy to forget, but this time last week we were talking, Utah's offense at the time had looked invincible. They looked perfect so far. Offensive line, one of the best in the country. Devin Dampier was, really elusive in the pocket, and they looked unstoppable. So for what Texas Tech did, that was impressive to me. They forced 3 turnovers in the first half alone and really silenced Utah's offense, held them to 10 points. So defensively, that was strong enough right there. And then you flip it onto the offensive side. Not many teams are able to do this against a Utah front. They really established the line of scrimmage. In the post-game press conference, they asked Kyle Whittingham, Utah's head coach, about it. He said, never in a million years would I have guessed that we would lose the line of scrimmage battle to Texas Tech, but it happened. So credit Texas Tech. Both lines got it done. And then credit Will Hammond, the backup quarterback, came in for an injured Baron Morton. When that injury happened, I started thinking, uh-oh, here we go. Here comes the collapse. And he actually strengthened the offense, or at least threw him a curveball. 3 straight touchdown drives to close the game out. So huge upgrade in the power ratings. I already had them relatively high, but this put them into the top 10. And if you project forward, they look like the favorite the rest of the way in all their Big 12 games. They look like a surefire team to be playing in the Big 12 title game. Probably a likely playoff team at this point, too.
Yeah, it's. I mentioned it on the podcast with Adam earlier this week when Morton got hurt. I took Utah +4.5 live, and I was blown away by the performance I saw from Will Hammond. Very impressive to see him come in. LSU's an interesting case study right now so far this year when you think about their week one win and how we discussed that LSU team coming off of that week one win. And look, I was impressed by the defense and the way that they played and, going into a daunting environment. And now that win doesn't look as impressive as Clemson has completely collapsed here as they have lost 3 games and, just lost last week to a Syracuse team where they were, north of a 17-point favorite. And then on the flip side, you've got Ole Miss who, played a barn burner against Arkansas, 41-35. They have to turn to a backup quarterback in Trinidad Chambliss. And it looks like as of now, there isn't really much of a drop-off from Austin Simmons to Chambliss. So this is a massive game, obviously. On Saturday, down there in Oxford, you've got the Lane Kiffin situation, too, with his daughter dating one of the players on LSU, which only in college football can you get a unique storyline like that. But I'm really intrigued by this one, 3:30 Eastern time, Ole Miss right now, around a pick'em, maybe a slight favorite against LSU.
Yeah, that drama reminds me of that A.J. Hawk situation with Brady Quinn. What was that, 2005? You had the cutoff jersey, half blue, half red. Something like that here with the Kiffin situation. But, it's going to be must-see television. I think coming in, it was one of those times where my number surprised me. I run my data Sunday morning. It came out as Ole Miss as the favorite. I thought, this looks a little bit different. But then, of course, Vegas comes out with their number and kind of was on side with them. So, I agree with where it's at. I have it Ole Miss by a point, so kind of a toss-up. Trinidad Chambliss has really impressed me so far. He was a Division II transfer. He's came in back-to-back 400-yard games. That impresses me. He was drawing some Baker Mayfield comparisons from his head coach and from his coordinator. It looks the part. And, their defense has been timely. Maybe not the best statistically, but they forced a key fumble against Arkansas to seal that one. LSU, you're right. It's a case where you downgrade a little bit. It's almost unfair to the team. Like, they went out, they won their game, but the wins have to be downgraded a little bit now that we've seen their opponent more. Like you said, with Clemson, that's a downgrade, and Florida certainly a downgrade. So you credit the undefeated start, but maybe not as impressive. In my weekly poll, my FWAA writers poll, I dropped them down to 10th. I mean, you got to be fluid in these situations. We argue with AP voters how they with the anchoring bias. You got to be fluid both ways. So I lowered LSU to 10th. If they go and press against Ole Miss, I'll put them right back up in the top 5. But you got to be fluid week to week. But with this one, I like Ole Miss. I think they're going to get it done here, and it's going to be just another electric SEC night.
I'm really curious about Notre Dame Arkansas, and based off of the data, right? Because you've now got 3 games of this Notre Dame defense. And it's been a train wreck. There's no other way to look at it. Week one, maybe not as bad against Miami. There were some moments where I was certainly scratching my head with breakdowns in the secondary. And then week 3 against Texas A&M, the loss 41-40. And then last week, even in the win, Purdue was having plenty of success. So I'm curious now that you've got last year's data where Notre Dame was probably a top 5 defensive team, maybe even top 3. And now you look at it. them and where they're at with the loss of Al Golden and some personnel pieces. So where do you have this Notre Dame defense and where do you have this Arkansas offense? Because there's a reason that this total has gone up to 64.5, Brett.
Well, great question with both. The first with Notre Dame, a huge downgrade from last year. It is a small sample size, but you can't unsee it. I mean, three games in, it does not look like a dominant unit at all. So last year, you're right, I had them top three defensively. They're now outside the top 40 in my numbers. And the way I color-coded there on Pick 6 Plus and in the magazine, it's, you know, green, yellow, red, red being the bad stats, obviously. And you look at it, it's a whole lot of red. I'm not used to seeing that for Notre Dame's defense. So, you know, maybe they'll get it cleaned up. But they look confused pre-snap last week against Purdue. Some bad pursuit angles, some coverage busts throughout the season. You want to see that get fixed. And it's really bad timing because Arkansas is lighting everybody up. When you watch them play, it's just they glide down the field. It's chunk plays. Talen Green, I know I'm doing a lot of quarterback comparisons today, but Talen Green, I was watching his games. He looks a little bit like Vince Young, the way he glides down the field. Some zone read keepers where he just, you know, it's kind of deceptive how quick he is. He'll glide and get 15 yards. So I think it's a really competent offense, one of the best in the country so far statistically. Turnovers are a question with Arkansas. Green, as great as he's played, he's had a couple bad picks, one in the end zone, two last week. So, you know, and they're 2-2, but don't let that record mislead you. They're really close to 4-0. I just had mentioned Ole Miss's fumble that they forced. That was against Arkansas. That might have flipped that result. And this week they lost a fumble at the goal line to beat Memphis. So really close to 4-0. The reason why that over is so high, I agree with it. We're going to see a lot of points because Arkansas's defense looks weak. So you got two weak defenses and two offenses that have really impressed. That equates to points. So look out for some points here in this one.
Yeah, it's a big jump, no doubt. And we talked about this briefly just a moment ago with Wes. But, you know, Notre Dame, their totals have been kind of 49, 50, 51, and now, boom, 64.5. But you got to make those adjustments, and this Arkansas team certainly can score. I'm looking at your profile. It's a lot of green on Arkansas's offense and a lot of red on Notre Dame's defense. But conversely, a lot of yellow there for Arkansas's defense. Brett, before we let you run, you do such a great job of pointing out, you know, the big games of the week. We've hit on a number here. Any other game that you want to focus on here in week number 5, which, as you, I think, very eloquently pointed out in Pick 6 Plus there in the front, this is your, quote, cancel your plans Saturday of 2025.
Yeah, cancel your plans 2025. Of course, you have the two headliners we hit on at night. You got Bama, Georgia. You got Penn State, Oregon. That Ohio State-Washington game, I'm glad we covered it because that was one that I feel like is flying under the radar just because it's not two ranked teams per the AP, but Washington certainly is top 25 in my book. I've got them inside my top 20 even. Other games, A&M versus Auburn, I want to keep an eye on that and really see their second big tests for both of them. USC-Illinois, I think you're going to see USC light them up. I think we'll see consecutive losses for Illinois and really drop them out of the top 25 once and for all. Another key one, Arizona State TCU. This Big 12, it's wide open. I think so far you can put Texas Tech at the top, but that battle for second looks like it'd be between these two teams, Arizona State, TCU. You got TCU coming off an explosive shootout against SMU where McAllister, the receiver, went for 250 receiving yards, three touchdowns, the game winner. That was electric to watch there. Meanwhile, Arizona State coming off a coin flip win against Baylor. Back and forth in the fourth quarter, they hit a walk-off field goal to win it. So both off of emotional highs, it's going to go a long way in this Big 12 race. So those are some additional games, but like I said, cancel the plans, get multiple screens set up, go quad box, because it's going to be an all-time college football Saturday, at least the best of this season so far.
Yeah, this is the one we've been eyeing up, and we've had some good ones so far, but no doubt the day wraps up with a loaded night slate. Brett, as always, remind the folks about Pick 6 Plus and how they can grab Pick 6 Plus.
Thanks so much. Weekly stats and information package emailed out every Tuesday. If you sign up, I'll get you yesterday's edition as well. But pick6previews.com/plus, everything on there. You have team profiles, stat profiles, betting trends, line projections, even to forecast out every team's remaining games in the season. So, yeah, a lot to look at. We got samples, testimonials. Go check it out. pick6previews.com/plus.
And make sure you get that S on previews. I got a tweet saying, where is it? I said, it's previews. So pick6previews with an S.com/plus. Brett, always appreciate it, man. It's going to be an awesome Saturday. We'll talk next week and recap it and look ahead to week number 6.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me. Enjoy.
There it is. Brett Ciancia at Pick Six Previews. You could follow him on social media. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek, our producer, as well as Ryan Hunter. We're back on Thursday breaking down the full card. Best bets galore with Matt Eumanns. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.